Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us tonight to join the conversation is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is home base, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com /timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com /timeforanawakening. And listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can listen to it on TuneIn. To any of your handheld devices, TuneIn is a free app. You can download TuneIn, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can listen to the live stream, even into your car. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program, with the fan page on Facebook, and also Time for Awakening Media. Home base is out there. It should be one of your favorites also. If not, type in timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting articles and blogs, podcasts, and programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, Freestyle Friday, so to speak, will be an open forum this evening. Anything on your mind, give us a call. Let's talk about it. There's a lot of things been happening this week. We'll play a little clip of the Umar Johnson interview on Roland Martin program. For any of our listeners that haven't heard it, we're kind of the last to talk about it, but it's Friday evening, so we're going to talk about it. But anything that's on your mind, you're free to bring it up at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. When you dial that number, anybody that dials it from their computer, laptop, or desktop, or a tablet or anything, and you want to be involved in the chat, you can chat a question, you can make a comment, we'll read it over the air. Just log on to the chat line. Time for Awakening chat line is on uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's Uber, U-B-E-R, uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. And on the right-hand corner, the third icon down, is the chat button. So just hit that button and you can type in your message, your comment, your question, anything. That'll be part of the program, the chat line. Again, that's uberconference.com/timeforawakening to chat your comment or question. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, brother. How are things going?
How are you, sir?
Oh, everything is fine. I'm looking forward to the lively exchange we're going to have this evening. I think it's going to once again help to inform us and maybe share these different points of view and come up with, as you always ask us to do, the solutions that we need in order to continue to move forward.
Yeah, we're in open forum this evening. Anything that's on the caller's mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And also a new feature that we're going to add as far as the listening audience getting involved, the chat line, any comments, questions, anything like that. To be involved in open forum, or even when we have guests, you can utilize the chat line by going to, if you're on your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, you can go to uberconference.com. That's uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. uberconference.com/timeforawakening. And on your right-hand side of the screen, the third icon down, you'll see the chat button. And just hit that button and you can chat your comments, questions, or anything like that. And we'll read them on the air, read them to our guests. And you can get involved that way also on Time for an Awakening. Brother Richard, a few things going on this week. One of the hot topics was Brother Umar Johnson was on Roland Martin's program, the morning program on TV One, discussing a couple of different topics. I'm going to play the clip in its entirety for our listening audience. I would assume a lot of the listening audience have probably heard it by now. But if they haven't, just for the sake of discussion, we'll play it again in its entirety so you can hear the exchange between Umar Johnson and Roland Martin and his panel of three guests. Because there's some interesting things there that were stated, Brother Richard, that I kind of want to talk about this evening.
Yes, yes.
Two other things that I want to make mention of, and it's not surprising. No charges are going to be filed against the police officers that ran into the Walmart and killed Johnny Crawford III. The grand jury concluded there wasn't enough evidence to charge the officers with any crime, so they won't be charged with murder. Running in there, the man picking out toys for his son was in the aisle with toy guns and had a toy gun in his hand while he was on the cell phone with his mother, and police officers ran in and gunned him down. You can see from the video, as soon as they went into the store, they just ran into the aisle and just fired. No questions asked. So, again, the same thing, same results. No charges filed against the officers. So, you know, these things continually happen. It gives our people that are asleep, some of them, a small percentage of them, a wake-up call. And to others, it tells us that we need to come up with some solutions to move our people forward. Workable solutions that we can all get involved in. But go ahead, Richard. You want to say something in reference?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and I can't validate. I did see this week where on the opposite side, a white man was in one city. Police officers went in his house and he had a gun upstairs and he shot the officer. And he shot at the officer. And they still tried to talk him out of, for him to drop the gun. And when I seen that clip and I was, you know, doing just what you're saying as far as making this comparison, and the police officer, one of the police officers got killed. But the approach, the differences of approach, and as you say, you know, I can only see things right now, you know, when we talk about this from the eyes of living in an urban area in the north, right? And I think in the south and rural areas, it might be have a different perspective in these counties and towns, or in the west, in cities and smaller counties. But if, as you say, looking for the solution part, if we don't take control over the hiring and the political positioning that's necessary to control the police department, it's obvious that the way these grand juries are placing these verdicts, that they're saying, oh, it's open season on black people.
Yeah, it gives them carte blanche. It gives them the feeling to know that not only are there police unions in their corner, but the judges, the district attorneys, and everybody else. Right. So just like you said, they feel comfortable now in doing this because they know there's no repercussions for abusing, beating. They're not even beating black folks now. They're just gunning them down. Used to be in the past when I was young, they used to beat you up, you know, work you over with the billy club and stuff like that. But they're not even doing that now. They don't even come in contact with you. They just blow you away.
And you heard about the state attorney general in Florida who was pulled over.
Exactly. I was going to mention that. And you know, it's kind of ironic, Richard, that it's the same state's attorney general that says that she wasn't going to pursue the death penalty anymore because it was racially biased. Mm-hmm. That same woman, what was her name? Aramis Ayana.
Mm-hmm.
pulled over, and the reason they gave her wasn't even an official reason. We just randomly checked license plates after they found out who she was.
And even to do that, I mean, when I heard that, okay, what you're saying is, as a law, you're just checking everybody. Now, what? How? See, Elliot. I mean, this is the other thing that I don't understand how these quote unquote Americans, you know, these quote unquote white Americans, don't see that there's a problem with the state having that much power of actually saying, you have no real rights. We are actually monitoring all of you as if you're under a state-sponsored police, under a police state. Because that's basically what it is. You don't know that they're running your tags, and you didn't do anything. So, and then they say that there's a law to justify that. And then did you hear the excuse? Well, because your tags didn't come up with anything, but you also had dark windows.
Yeah, well, that was the other excuse, because they didn't know what to say when they found out who she was. So they just start randomly making up anything.
And but the expression, it became justifiable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, they're saying it's a law base that gives them the right to do that. If you have, now you're supposed to be able to purchase these tinted windows, but if you purchase them, then that automatically, just like you mentioned about, now this brother was just buying his child a gun. All he was doing was going to the store to buy a toy for his child. By going to the store to purchase something, open him up to be executed. He ain't go to the store to rob it. He didn't go to the store and created no threat to the establishment. And I'm not, you know, not knowing what made them come in, but for them to come in with the fear of their life in a department store in the toy section where they have toy guns and then fire because they feel threatening for their life. And then the jury saying they don't have enough evidence. What's the difference?
Same thing, same soup warmed over every week. A week doesn't go out before something like this happens in any city, USA. It's happening all over. It's major cities, small towns. It's happening all over. So it shows a mindset of Europeans, the mindset of the system of white supremacy. And it also shows us that we have to do something ourselves. We can't depend on anybody else. We have to come up with the solution ourselves. And it is workable solutions out here. We're going to have to police the police, start policing our own communities, learn how to use weapons safely and intelligently so we can start protecting our own communities. I mean, that's what it's going to boil down to. And that's what it's boiling down to. You can't call the police now. You didn't have plenty of incidents where it's been disturbances in the neighborhood. People call the police. And they're the ones that get gunned down.
Mm-hmm. It's just difficult, and we know from the federal report that there are what used to be. I mean, we're in 2017. We're not in 1917, right? Or 1940 or 50, where now. Even with the federal investigation saying there are quote unquote white extremists who are now, they don't have to have a hood on their head with a white, you know, with a white sheet and the holes cut out in their eyes. They can actually come and get on the police force and utilize that hood, or what I hear some of us call it, the blue shield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and take that and become, use that as the cloak to take off these incidents of unnecessary, unprovoked murders. And at the same time, still get the community support. Just like 1917, 1940, 1950, get community support for and justification of it's okay. And you know, it's as you say, it gives us call for alarm, because now you can't even tell. Before, at least you could tell these, you knew the guys and you knew who was in that organization. Now you don't know these guys, who's in your community, what they belong to, and what they will, what their real intent is. And we're getting more and more reports of this, as you say, every week. Come on now.
It goes right back to what we talked about last week, those Virginia slave codes, where if a white person, if a black person resists and a white person feels threatened, that they can use deadly force.
Right.
And nothing will happen to them. So, you know, it's just history repeating itself. But the thing is, what do we do about it? It always goes back to what can we and what should we and what are we going to do about this? A couple other things, too, a couple other news stories before we move on, is the young man that was about to graduate from Bowie State that was killed by the white boy down there in Maryland. And that was clear from the, it was clear from this white boy's Facebook page that he was a racist, a bigot. He had all types of racist stuff on his Facebook page, and he killed this young man and didn't even know it. Well, he'll be prosecuted for murder, but they're not going to prosecute him for a hate crime. They had already stated this. It has come out in published reports that they're not going to pursue hate crime charges against the white boy that killed the young man about to graduate from college at Bowie State University, a young man he didn't even know and just randomly killed somebody black. So again, it also shows that white privilege that we have talked about on the program. That actor that is in movies, he was filming a movie down in Atlanta, Shia LaBeouf. He's been in several movies. Some running he had on the street, it involved black people. I don't know all the details. They did show the video once he was arrested, because they said he took off running. He ran into a hotel. They apprehended him in the hotel. Now, if the police are chasing a black guy and he takes off and running, that's when you get shot in the back. Well, anyway, they arrested him, took him to the police station where he was booked, and that's when they showed the video. Now, he's sitting on one side of the desk. It's two black cops on the other side of the desk along with a white cop. The white cop tells him to dip his hands in the ink and, you know, roll it for the fingerprints. And he addresses the black cop. And, you know, uses racial epithets and tell him that, you know, you're going to hell. And the black cop says, well, why am I going to hell? He said, because you're black. He let the two black cops have it. The white cop didn't say anything, just kept booking him, put his belongings in the bag, stapled the bag. Now, if that was somebody black and said derogatory things to a white guy, they'd take you in the back and tear you up. And they might take you in the back and you find yourself hung in a cell. But, again, white privilege. White privilege, they handle these cases and they handle white folks differently no matter what they have done. This stuff that didn't happen up here in Pennsylvania. This is an Italian boy, a young man that the master killed these four other white boys up there. Now, his parents, they bring his parents in. Normally, you would get people arrested. If murders happened in my house, Richard, and they arrest my son, then my wife and me are going to be arrested. And they'll sort it out at the station and charged. Number one, they arrested the white boy that killed the people, but they haven't charged him with murder. They charged him with stealing one of the guy's cars. They immediately impaneled a grand jury before any charges was brought and brought his parents in to ask them questions with the grand jury. And now it's clear that, it happened on the parents' property. And he had to use some type of backhoe to bury these people because the graves was 12 feet deep.
Hmm.
But that's just the way they handle things dealing with whites and the justice system. It's two different ways that they administer justice when it comes to white folks and black. And it's clear. White folks don't want to see it, but it's clear.
And you know, Elliot, I don't know if I'm politically correct. I don't care if they don't see it. We have to see it.
Exactly.
We have to be able to recognize, you know, that this is something. I don't care what side of the political spectrum that as far as being black person, a person of African descent or an African, a global African. If we don't recognize, as you say, not just white privilege, it gets down to the personal and how it's exhibited, but the system supports it
mm-hmm.
in the sense of the policies, the laws, the programs that provide those individuals with their privilege. Now, and that ain't no new thing to us. So, you know, for me, I can see why they can see it as okay. You know, when we see the grand jury, whatever that discussion is, however they come to that conclusion, we've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't understand is how we continue as a people or in these particular localities, whether we're a minority population or the majority population, have no power or seen. We don't report that we have no power in relationship to protecting ourselves for what we know has been inevitable since we came here, or the reason why we got here.
Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, I want to play the clip that Umar was on Roland Martin's show for our listening audience that didn't hear it. I believe a lot of our listening audience have heard it, but it might be some that haven't. But for the sake of the discussion, we're going to play the clip so you can hear it in its entirety, and then we'll come back and kind of talk about some of the things in it. You can join the conversation too, because we're in open forum, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in a freestyle Friday, so to speak. Anything on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present. Our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m. with your host.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the Black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a Black Nationalist Party or a Black Nationalist Army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with.
The economic philosophy of Black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a Black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of Black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer, the community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man. The man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening, and we're in open forum this evening on this Friday evening, rainy Friday evening here in Philadelphia. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. If you want to ask a question, make a comment or whatever, you can utilize the chat line also. if you're on your laptop, your desktop, your computer, just go to uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. That's uberconference.com/timeforanawakening. And on the right side of your screen, the third icon down is the chat button. Just hit that button and you can type in question, comment, or anything like that. And we can just read it over the air. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let me, because we got a couple calls on hold, but I want to play this clip of Brother Umar when he was on Roland Martin's program, and then we could come back and discuss it, maybe with our listening audience, but we'll come back and discuss it. Let me play this clip right now.
All right, folks, Dr. Umar Johnson recently was on 105.1 FM out of New York, The Breakfast Club, with DJ Envy, Angela Yee, and Charlamagne Tha God. During the interview, Johnson talked about a whole range of issues. It led to him being the talk of Black Twitter last week, and a lot of people were questioning his educational credentials.
Now, people ask me, what can we expect from a Donald Trump White House for Black America? And the answer is real simple. You can expect exactly what you got from a Obama White House. Absolutely nothing. Black people know they're not American, but they will fight like hell to protect that identity because they don't want to be identified with who they really are, and that's being African. As long as you have a skill, you can always feed your family. But if all you got is college degrees, you might end up in an unemployment line. I'm a psychologist. Ain't too many Black people running around looking for a psychologist to reveal all the skeletons in their closet.
All right, folks, joining us right now, Dr. Umar Johnson. Welcome back to the show. First and foremost, it was amazing looking at this whole reaction. I mean, I'm sitting here, again, people asking all kind of questions. Things are blowing up. And so many people jumped on saying he's not a real doctor. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where did you graduate from and you got your Ph.D.?
Mm-hmm. My undergraduate education was from Millersville University. 3 degrees, political science, psychology, master's in school psychology. Subsequent to that, Pennsylvania certification as a school psychologist, which I've been for almost 20 years. After that, I got my educational leadership master's degree and principal certificate from Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I earned my doctorate degree from the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, American Psychological Association approved program, one of the top psychology training programs on the East Coast. 6 degrees in all. And anyone can lift up a telephone and call and verify those degrees.
So when you see folks who question your degrees, your response?
It's because my narrative is a whole lot different from the average mainstream Black scholar. I don't parrot the narrative that the American social order wants Black scholars to parrot. I tell the truth. I don't scratch unless I itch, and I don't dance unless I like the music. And because they're not used to having someone with a traditional education posit non-traditional views, people will automatically start to question his credentials. How did he get this far believing what he believes in? Well, you have to play the spook who sat by the door. When I got accepted into those 3 universities, they didn't know what I believed in. They didn't know what I stood for. But as time went on, it revealed itself. But I'm unapologetically African, so I'm not really concerned with what people think about me personally. I have a job to do, and that is to awaken the sleeping consciousness of African people, not just in America, but all across the world.
One of the things that you said during the interview, you said that Mandarin was one of the official languages in South Africa.
Yes, sir.
And others said you were dead wrong.
Yes, because I didn't clarify that I was speaking of it being an official language in the public school system of South Africa. So I should have clarified that Mandarin is an official language in the Republic of South Africa's school system. It's not an official language in the country. It's an official language in the school system. And I was speaking of schools, but I didn't clarify that. So that's my responsibility.
During that particular interview, you talked about a variety of issues that also got people talking. One of them dealt with your views on interracial marriage.
Yes, sir.
And so so explain that for folks who did not hear it.
Certainly. Simply put, any Black man who is with a woman who's not an African herself is going to have a difficult time getting respect from me. I believe black men need to be with black women. The black family is under attack. Only one out of every four black women gets married. The black woman is last likely to get married. She's the last married, the first divorced. We have, what, two-thirds of our children being raised by working-class and impoverished single black female-led house homes. The destruction of a nation begins in the home of its families. And if we want to save black people, we have to save the black family. So, and in order to do that, black men have to commit themselves to black women.
So when you talk about not getting your respect, so if that's the case, you're saying President Barack Obama to get your respect because his dad married a white woman?
Oh, not at all.
Would Harry Belafonte?
Not at all. I want to be very clear about something. As Pan-Africanists, the product of an interracial union is an African. I have heroes who are biracial. Some of the grandfathers of Pan-Africanism were of mixed racial ancestry. You don't blame a child for how they got here.
But I'm asking you this here. Harry Belafonte has a white wife. No respect for him?
It doesn't matter your social status.
No. I didn't say social. I'm talking about one who put the work in.
Right, but you put him out.
No. I'm asking you. So mm-hmm. Harry Belafonte.
Yes, sir.
Sidney Poitier, Julian Bond, Vernon Jordan.
And you're naming all them to say what?
No, these are all African American men mm-hmm. who have
done some good things.
Who have married white women. But you said any black man who marries a white woman will not get your respect.
Can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
And what I'm telling you is this. I don't care who you name. I don't care how much work you did for black people. Your greatest commitment to black people is being committed to a black woman. It is still a contradiction. No matter how much you think you did for the struggle, if you really were concerned with black people, you would commit yourself to a black woman. So it doesn't matter how successful they are. It doesn't matter how great you may claim them to be. At the end of the day, you didn't think enough about your own people to marry a woman who looks like you.
Frederick Douglass.
Yes, sir. An ancestor of mine.
So when you say ancestor, what does that mean?
Let me break it down.
Because, again, some have said you tried to claim mm-hmm. that you are a descendant of Frederick Douglass.
Okay, so let's deal with that.
So hold on one second. Here's a statement from the family. Let me go ahead and read this, please. The family of Frederick Douglass has received numerous inquiries about Umar Johnson questioning his relationship to Frederick Douglass. There have also been questions about his legitimacy of his PhD and the handling of the donations he's received for his school that he is promoting. We can tell you with 100% certainty that he is not a descendant of Frederick Douglass. With that being said, Mr. Johnson is very careful not to bill himself as a descendant, but he doesn't correct people when they refer to him in this way. He calls himself a blood relative, which is a nebulous reference designed to make people think he is a descendant. We have researched his explanation of being a blood relative to the great abolitionist. Some of the information he provides is accurate, but an extremely important piece of his explanation with regards to a documented relative of Frederick Douglass is false. The information he recites correctly is from the public record, so his knowledge of our family ancestry is far from definitive proof.
Two things there. One, he's not a descendant of Frederick Douglass, okay? I would concur with that, all right? But then two, you also heard that some of the things he says is correct. So the question becomes, he's either related or he's not, okay?
So are you related?
I'm about to answer your question, okay. If you allow me to do that. I am a blood relative of Frederick Douglass. My name is on the family tree. We have a family reunion every 2 years. What they're talking about, and I want to make sure you're clear, they're talking about whether or not I come through the loin of Frederick Douglass, which I do not, nor have I ever claimed. Okay? I have more videos on YouTube than any other scholar. I speak around the world more than any other scholar. Show me where I've ever said I was a descendant. I've only claimed one thing, kinsmen. How are my kinsmen? If you ever read any of the autobiographies of Frederick Douglass, he talks about growing up on Tuckahoe Creek with Cousin Stephen. Cousin Stephen is Stephen Bailey, Dr. Umar Johnson's four times great-grandfather, whose grave I just visited last week. I go every year. Okay, that's my four times great-grandfather. He married my four times great-grandmother, Caroline Wilson Bailey. From that union came my three times great-grandfather, George Washington Bailey, the first black public school teacher on Eastern Shore, Maryland. He married Grandma Annie. They had Grandma Caroline. Okay, she had Grandma Vivian. Grandma Vivian married a Spanish-speaking Cuban immigrant, Grandpa Cicero. They had Grandma Ida, who's still alive, who married James Johnson, who had my father Jamal, who married my mama Barbara, and from that union I was born. I am a blood of Belly. I am not married in. What they're talking about is strictly descendancy, something I've never claimed. Am I a kin? Do I directly come from the loin of the first cousin and potentially half-brother of Frederick Douglass? And the reason I say potentially, the slave master who owned our family, a white man named Aaron Anthony, raped Frederick's mother and raped Stephen's mother, my ancestor. And there's significant evidence to suggest that. Some people could still argue, though, that they were not brothers because it's not conclusive. Fine, throw that out. I'm still a kinsman because I come through the blood of his first cousin.
You talked about, again, respect. You respect.
I don't talk about respect. No, I get tremendous respect from my people.
I'm not talking about that. Do you respect Frederick Douglass?
Obviously, yes.
But he had a white wife.
He did.
So that's what I'm trying to.
I'm going to clarify.
Why is that an issue? Why is that? If you put in the work and you have the history, Who cares who you marry?
I already answered that question, and I told you, I don't care how much work you put in. If you don't commit yourself to a black woman, ultimately you wasn't totally committed to the struggle. Even Frederick Douglass has to be criticized, as I did on The Breakfast Club. Now, it has to be put in context. He didn't marry the white woman until he was an old man, after his wife, Anna Murray Douglass, of 50 years, a blue-black chocolate woman through whom all my cousins were born. He was an old man when he did it, but nonetheless, he did it. And yes, he has to be criticized on that, because a black man needs to be with a black woman, and it is a contradiction. I don't care how much work you think you've done for black folks to not commit yourself to a black woman.
Hold tight 1 second. I got more questions when we come back.
I would argue the reason black men marry white women is because they wish they were white themselves, and having the white man's prize, his queen, is a psychological symbol to myself that I am equal to him.
We're back with Dr. Umar Johnson. In that particular statement, the family also addressed this here. You talked about taking over the buildings or the land of a black school that was shut down.
Yes, HBCU St. Campus. Paul's College.
And you were raising money for it. First of all, how much money has been raised, and what's the status of that project?
Well, St. Paul's has been sold. Approximately 3 to 5 months ago, I was told by the auction company in charge of the sale that it was been sold to a developer.
So how much money was raised, what the people gave, all kinds of people gave, how much was raised, and what's the status of that?
$700,000, and the status is we're still looking for a school, and the status is my start date for FDMG will be 8/21/18, or if at all, it may be delayed to 8/21/19, which is the anniversary of the Nat Turner War.
We say looking for a school, why not start a charter school? I mean, you can start a school.
Because charter schools are owned by the state, and I'm a Pan-Africanist. I believe what is to be done for black people must be done by black people. Why do I want a charter school?
So you want a private school?
Exactly. Independent school.
Lauren.
So the question of interracial marriage, come on, man. You're too smart for this. We got 43.
I'm too smart for what?
We got 43 million black people in this country.
And that
we got
means
over
what?
190 million white people. You're going to sit here and say that if
you got
a black person, a black person, a white person get married, one can't understand the other person's struggle? You've seen Tim Wise, right? You've seen Reverend Wallace.
Systematic
empowerment. You've seen white people who understand racism very well.
That doesn't mean they're going to do anything about it.
The other thing that is obviously true is they understand racism when you see things like the murder of Medgar Evers, like the murder of Martin Luther King. They understand racism.
And what did they do about it?
They understand us gaining just fine, and that's why murder happened.
Based on what?
So the idea that somehow a white person can't understand our struggle?
I could care less what they understand. I'm asking you, what have they done systematically to improve the opportunities of white folks?
He
did not tell me that.
Oh, yes, you did tell me
that. He did not tell me that.
You're going to tell me that guys like Tim Wise and Reverend Wallace don't understand race in America?
What about Tim Wise?
They don't understand race in America?
He articulates racism, but what has he done?
There are no white people that understand race in America. There's no white people. There's no white people understand race in America.
There's not a white person.
Them going to UG.
There's not a white person in America who has ever worked to systematically eliminate the white privilege that they benefit from vis-a-vis your oppression.
You're lying.
You know,
190
million people in America.
Eugene.
We're not going to go there. We're not. I haven't
called me a liar, and you're cool.
Well, it's a fact that
watch
you're lying.
How you talk
it's
to
a
me,
fact that you're lying. It's
you.
A fact that you're lying.
I understand you.
Everybody, 1 second. Several things I don't allow. I don't allow the N-word. I don't allow coon. We can talk to one another and disagree, but I do not use racial epithets against
and
black
that's
people.
That's fine, but he called me a liar.
No.
So the language needs to be watched on
racial epithets will not be used on this show.
And that's fine.
By anybody.
But how we talk to each other needs to be.
You can say whatever you want, but no racial epithets will be used on this show about black people to black people. Eugene, your question.
So from your paradigm, from your perspective, civil rights isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Current criminal justice reform legislation moving isn't a current act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Folk that funded the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. I'm sorry, as an American, because I define myself as an American, an African American.
Sure you do.
I live in a country that moves forward together. And I say that as a Republican. We move forward together. Yes, we have individual struggle. Yes, we have struggles.
I'm not talking
yes,
about
we have,
individual.
Yes, no. Yes, we
I'm
have.
Talking
we
about
have
systematic.
We have systematic.
This is proportionality. Finish it 15 seconds. And
we have systematic struggles. And together as a country, moving forward to defeat those struggles.
Really? So based on what you said, I want you to give me examples of white folk, not individuals, but systematically.
Why can't it be individuals?
Excuse me.
Why can't they be individuals?
Excuse me. One second. I know you can't wait to finish.
One second answer.
Can I finish?
Go.
Okay, I'm going. Okay? You cannot name anything systematically done ever in this country by white people to equal the playing field for black folks.
The Civil Rights Act, Congress literally sits behind us. The Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act.
Are you aware?
Both of them.
Are you aware?
Both of them.
White people are proud of you, son.
Scott Bolden.
Real quick. I think the terminology and the narrative being used is a little misleading, not from you, but from this dialogue right here.
Okay.
You know, it's one thing to sympathize with the struggle. It's another one to be to empathize with the struggle. Very different. When you talk about marriage being a political choice, and that one of the things, arguments that you made that I tend to agree with is that if you don't marry a black woman, then she can never support and comfort and value your day-to-day struggle as a black man. That being said, I do think that the level of the rhetoric that you use in regard to your Pan-Africanism is difficult for many of us, quote, in the mainstream, to get our arms around. But this issue about black men and white women in the civil rights struggle is not a new discussion. My mother was a civil rights activist in Chicago, and she would often complain privately that, one, you can't sleep black, you can't sleep white and talk black,
Thank
if you,
you
will. And
Thank
that's
you.
Always been in the American struggle, American, African-American struggle with ourselves.
Yes,
the other thing is that we struggle with our own psychology about self-love and otherwise. And if we get our arms around that, that does make sense.
Okay?
But you would have to say that you know 190 million people.
But you're being too
dictatorial.
You would have to claim that.
Individuals don't matter.
You'd have to claim
that. No, go ahead and respond. Go ahead.
And I agree with my brother's
Scott.
Comments.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Scott, he brought up the Civil Rights Bill. But what he did not talk about in relation to the Civil Rights Bill is there were two words included in that bill that ultimately served to take away from black people what that bill was intended to deliver. They added gender and they added sexual orientation. And as a result of that, white women and homosexuals have been able to strip black America from the intended gains of the Civil Rights Act. So there was still racism in that bill if you will study that history.
So Umar, your question was, has anyone black ever systematically done, has anyone white ever systematically
not
done anything?
Systematically. White America.
So LBJ would be the answer for that.
No,
because that's the government.
No, I don't think you
heard
the
question. That's a systematic move.
No, you didn't hear the question.
No, you did not.
No,
yeah,
you didn't.
Yeah,
you're
did.
So quick to defend white folks that you're not listening.
No, I'm not trying to defend white folks.
I literally have 45 seconds, so restate the question and give an answer.
Okay.
I got 45
right,
seconds.
Let's get an answer.
The question was, what has white America done?
Right.
Not individuals. Systematically.
Not
You won't even let me finish.
Yeah, because you're
that in love with white folks, you won't even let you finish.
Point on everything.
Finish, literally, 20 seconds.
There is no bigger system than you.
20 seconds, I'll finish.
Go.
And in 20 seconds, I would say that the panel that you have here, who are extremely intelligent, do not represent the everyday black man and woman struggles, and because of that, they cannot articulate.
And you represent 43 million people in this country? I don't think so.
Weekdays on TV.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening, and we spent 12 minutes listening to the exchange on Roland Martin's show between Umar Johnson, Roland Martin, and his three panelists. Before I go to the callers, Richard, any initial comments?
Elliot, it's I have to say, you know, we're in an age where now communication is entertainment, right? I don't know whether Roland Martin set this panel up to where it couldn't have a really thorough or at least short thorough points of view from different perspectives, because the at least two on the panel, they they sounded, didn't make no sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me.
Well, I want to come back and talk about, because there's some several points on there I want to come back and talk about. But let's go to callers, because several callers have been waiting. Let's go to 404 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from? 404.
Yes, greetings. Is that me?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Ellen, and hi, Richard. This is Sarah calling in from Dallas.
How you doing?
Oh, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been kind of busy, so I haven't had a chance to really catch up with the show,
mm-hmm.
or at least to try and call in. But on your topic that you were speaking on with the open forum and starting with your earlier dialogue, you were speaking about with the police murders of Black youths as well, not even youths, because they're killing women,
mm-hmm.
and children.
Exactly.
Pretty much naming anything they could, anything that's Black that they've been shooting, killed, they've been doing it. And we seem to be getting away from the fact that the law enforcement in this country act as the domestic army, which is what they are. While the U.S. military is used externally to do the conquest and the conquering for the corporate giants, internally law enforcement is used as the military here to suppress Black people and any other people who want to dissent against this government.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really I don't see why people always look at them and say, okay, that they're to protect and serve, but they're not saying who to protect and serve whom. They're not protect and serve you. They're here to protect and serve their corporate masters, because Black people always seem to get it twisted that law enforcement came out of the slave catcher movement, and they were never our friends. So I don't see why people always get on TV and say that, you know, that, well, they're supposed to be protecting, and they're here to protect their corporate masters. And that's a job that they've been doing very effectively and getting away with doing it. And we are still looking as runaway booty for them to just shoot at, lock up, or do whatever it is that they want to do with us. And until we come into that realization and form some sort of self-defense plan,
mm-hmm.
we're going to keep always being the most easily and readily used target that these people are using for target practice.
I agree with you, sir. I agree with you. Until we come up with some type of formula, plan to protect our own communities and our own people from this wholesale murder, then it's going to keep happening. But go ahead. I don't want to cut. Go ahead.
No, that's true. We're supposed to, you know, we're having a dialogue. But and one of the things that we're going to have to do, we're going to have to start policing ourselves from within, because a lot of things that we allow to happen and get away with in our community, the men and the women, well, let me correct that. Let me say the males and the females. Because we're not acting like men, we're not acting like women. Until we take charge of it and get it in control, because right now we have these children are pretty much dominating and running things,
yep.
and they're the ones who are escalating things. Because I can speak from experience on where I live out here in Dallas and what I see going on around here. And, you know, the children are pretty much running roughshod and doing whatever they want. And the minute you step out, it's like I came on the other day and I tried to tell these young teenagers, well, hey, you know, that doesn't look appropriate. They just kind of look at me as if though I was strange and, you know, basically just turn their back on me and just continue doing what they were doing. It's like adults, we don't command any respect. And that's why for me, from what I've started learning to do, I've started learning to pull back, because some of us here, because people who are just breeding like slaves and having these children and they don't want no direction, they don't want you to tell them anything, and they themselves are not doing anything to control these children. So they're coming out here and they're becoming a problem, and these are the ones that are going to be readily and easy targets for law enforcement. I work at nights, Elliot and Richard, and most nights that I have to go in for my midnight shift that I have to go into to work, I see children out here. I see young people out here aimlessly walking their face in that blue screen of their cell phone. They're not paying attention. They're not looking at what they're doing. These are the easy target, because if somebody wants to come and snatch, do some body snatching or to kill somebody and get away with, they have ample opportunities in the Black community because they're walking by themselves. If you're not coming from or going to a job, I don't see why anyone should be out on the street walking around aimlessly at night. And that's what we do. We are wide open for any. That's why everybody come down here and do whatever they want to do, because we don't have any sort of control over it. We're not dressed for combat. You walking around here in flip-flops and socks on, pants below your behind. You got a cell phone in one hand. You holding up the pants with the other hand. Somebody attack you. What you going to do? You can't defend yourself. And you see that consistently walking. We are lackadaisical. We walk around here like we are in a zone. And that's why when Brother X calls in and he talk about the pending slaughter, we're gonna suffer massive casualty on our end. Because nobody is aware, they don't care, their antennas is not in tune with the universe to see that something is pending on the horizon. And it is not going to be good for black people. So walking around here, listening to Jay-Z, Beyonce, and, you know, drinking your 40s and smoking your weed, you know, waiting around here for when to legalize weed so you could go out here and smoke yourself into oblivion, this is not the way to go.
I agree, sir. I totally agree with what you're saying. Us developing some type of form or force, or like Malcolm said, some type of nationalist protectors or nationalist army, or go in conjunction with policing our neighborhoods. Because, you know, we've talked about this several times on our program. Any random street in the black community where you got some disruptive forces, just say, for example, I'll take a random block in Philadelphia. You might have 60 homes in a block. Of those 60 homes, you might have two households, maybe three, that are problems for the whole block, whose children are out of control, who don't have adult supervision, or the adult supervision is so blasted they don't care. And they basically hold the whole block hostage because nobody steps up. But if we step up with some type of uniform patrols with men involved, I don't necessarily want women out there because that's not... It might be confrontation sometime, and I don't want women involved in that. So that's just me personally. But, you know, if we have some type of patrols in our neighborhood, then we can step to these households or at least step to the adult supervision that's supposed to be in the household and get them to get their children under control. Or they'll have to leave the block or something will have to be done because we can't allow. We got enough problems dealing with these white folks and what they're doing to our communities. We can't allow out of control families, two or three on a block, to hold a whole block hostage because they don't know how to act. But we've been allowing it. I agree with you. We've been allowing that. Go ahead, sir.
It is true what you're saying. Yes, you're going to need some females involvement because when you have these little thuggets, which is what you got to call them, that runs around here, that of the female persuasion, and they act as the male gender, and they behave so very hard and masculine. You're going to need some female to step in there because some of these girls, they're going to need some tough handling. I don't want to see males trying to handle some of these females. So the sister's going to have to step up their game. Because, as you said, you know, we are just breeding like dogs. You know, you just put out a litter after litter with no sort of supervision. You shouldn't just run in the streets, especially now it's the summertime. There are no summer programs like they had back in the day when they had CETA, Manpower, and all of these other programs out there to offer some summer programs where these children could go in, work maybe 4 or 6 weeks out in their summer, make money for their school clothes, books, whatever. It is pretty much non-existent now, those type of programs. So they're out here just aimlessly walking around, faces in their cell phone. And even if some of them could get a job, maybe working at a grocery store or retail outlet or whatever, doing something constructive, they're not into that because all they want to do, they're on their doggone phone. I've never seen so people who are so tied to a cell phone as these generations. It's not only the children, it's the adults. It's like they can't do without the phone. So when you were talking to people, it's like earlier today, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. He was just, you know, texting me. I said, look, I can't do this text thing. I'm going to pick up the phone and we can talk and we can get everything out in 5 to 10 minutes rather than me trying to, you know, use my thumbs and trying to go through with this texting. I can't do it. But that's how these people, but that's how they're so hooked into technology, and they're using it, but not in the most efficient and effective manner.
Sarah. It's a consumer tool, so it isn't, Sister Sarah, you know, as you know, it's not even supposed to be used in an effective manner, because then that would be a tool for organizing purposes. And, you know, the purpose is not to help to have these tools so readily in our hands so that will assist us in organizing the community that we're in. One of the things that you raised that is, you know, struck my button is about the militarization of the community or at the local level. And I was looking at, and one of those people would always like, if I can, you know, reference something, I was looking at the American deep state. And Peter Dale Scott makes this point that I really didn't know before about this here plan called the continuity of government, where there, you know, since really World War II, but definitely after 9/11, the thing was to have the militarization at the local level. And we know that the police department has been financed by Homeland Security. I mean, police departments around the country, not only doing exercises, but actually given military hardware to actually control in urban areas and in rural areas and suburban areas all across the country. So the, you know, the police department isn't, as you say, the police department, a localized municipal arm anymore. It's an extension of the military, and it goes into that whole thing of being a part of a larger North American continent strategic plan command, not plan, but command. So that's important for us to realize as the point. And also, you know, to take us, when we look at our own history, how the young people who are here, how, when we think about the Black Power era of the 60s, there were two elements in that strategy. One was the defense of the community, and the other was the development of the community. Those were political strategies. And we know those two strategies and the individuals that would have been the elders of this time and would have set the culture for this time were deliberately destroyed and dissembled so that we wouldn't be able to even think that everything in our community, even having the relationships of how do we raise children or how do we operate for community control around the police, we would have had been more mature and more developed if those systems were deliberately attacked and dissembled from the 70s on. So it's what we're seeing and what you're experiencing, what we're experiencing is something that is partially our fault, but it's also a deliberate, direct military campaign that was attacked on our community as we were trying to develop real political power, even with our differences of ideology and personalities and things like that. Your comment sparks that, Adam.
Well, you're correct in that, because what they did is they remove all of the leaders, such as Imam Jamil Al-Amin and Matula Shakur, all of these men from the movement who were there to corral and to keep the community in focus. They moved. They're all languishing in prisons. They're dead. Or they're all on the run. And it was a deliberate strategy done to remove the Black male force, because, and they have just the females out here trying to control, trying to raise children, because all the men have been removed off of the scene, which brings me into the topic which Umar Johnson and the Roland Martin interview that you played, which was something that he was trying to get across, that Black men, Black women needs to build strong family to combat what we are seeing, the disintegration of the Black family that we are seeing out here. And when we hear ignorant Negroes like the female Lauren Victoria Bourke, and this Eugene Craig character that sat up there and is going to try and disparage Umar and tell him that, you know, come bring up some, you know, all the white daddies, talking about some Tim Wise or some Reverend Wallace. These people that they called, they're married to white women. What do they have to do with what Umar is talking about? You don't bring some, tell me what some liberal whites are out here talking about, these so-called good white people. They have nothing to do with the black family. But you see, it's only when it comes to us trying to talk about building strong families, we always have these ignorant Negroes coming out here, come telling about, I don't see nothing wrong with interracial marriage. Jews ain't going to be telling them, they say, well, you know, I don't see nothing wrong if I want to marry the descendant of Joseph Goebbels, you know, one of my daughters to get walk her down the aisle to marry one of them, or Himmler, something like that. They wouldn't say these ignorant things on there. The Japanese wouldn't say it's okay for one of my daughters to go marry somebody Korean.
Yeah, no other nationality, sir, would be saying that. No other nationality
exactly.
would be saying that.
But we go on these public airways and we have people defending it. Come talk about, well, we have it in our family. I don't give a darn if it's in our family. I have them in my family, too. But you know what? They are a minority group compared to the majority of us who are all black men, black women, married and raising, trying to raise strong families. Why am I going to be focused on the tiny minority of people that might slip into the family? Why should the focus be on them? But that's what we tend to do. We tend to get sidetracked and come talking about, and I'm glad that Umar set the record straight. What the hell about Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte and whatever? They might have done something good, but the whole point is they didn't see a black woman was good enough for them to go and share their life and share their wealth with. They figured, okay, I'm going to take that money and whatever it is that they've built and put it back into the hands of the enemy. Because we all know that black men have the shortest lifespan on this planet. And whatever it is that you make, it is that you go outside your race and you marry, it goes outside of the family. It's not doing anything that's going to benefit the black community. Are we consistently doing it? You know, marriage is a political statement. As you said, look at Donald Trump's children. They all made alliances that's going to further the wealth of that family. They don't go out here willy-nilly just say, I'm going to grab somebody, and, you know, I don't care. Love sees, love is blind. You know, it's only black people you hear saying this foolishness about this love blind nonsense. And it frustrates the hell out of me when I hear them say it, because love is not blind. When I went out here and I met my husband, I had to make a decision. If this man's personality is compatible with mine, if I like, you know, certain things about him, I have to get to know him. I
yes.
didn't blindly walk over here and say the first Negro I run into, I'm blind, I'm going to snatch him up, and we can go on down the aisle and get married. That didn't happen.
You're absolutely right, Sarah. That the way they describe it, and you hear not only that panel, you hear a lot of blacks describe it as, well, you can't help who you love, like it's some type of Cupid's arrow or something, a boulder falls on your head, and all of a sudden you're in love. It doesn't work like that. Like you said, you got to develop a relationship. You got to intentionally go out here and pursue a woman, and she got to pursue you. You can't hit her over the head like ancient Europeans used to do, hit women over the head and drag them off. No, you got to actively pursue women of the opposite sex, women of another nationality. That's something that you make a conscious decision that I'm going after this person. And they do it. And I think the reason, and let me say this, Sarah, too. I think the reason that it became a subject matter, especially with Umar, is because the white media tends to put the spotlight on black people that do this. And it's easy for them to do it because if you look, the overwhelming majority of these black athletes, black entertainers, if you look at them, the overwhelming majority of them have white women, white girlfriends. A lot of times I'm shocked when I see one of these prominent black athletes or entertainers with somebody black. It's always somebody white. And some of them don't care what type of white person they get. You got this one, this hip-hop artist one of the richest out there. He goes out there and married this old white whore that all she did was sleep with a bunch of black guys, make sex videos, and that's his prize? If that was a black woman, he wouldn't even want to touch her.
Exactly.
But you got black people going out.
West.
Yeah. You got black people.
You weren't supposed to call
him, man. Oh, you might as well call him out.
You got to call names as well as name call, because it needs to be said. Because, you know, we've got too many people, you know, we keep trying to let these people in, and they keep stabbing us, shooting us down, or making it easy for the enemy to target us. These things that the people are doing, as you said, and not only that, but it's like this young brother, Kari Henderson, he's from right here in Texas, up there in Austin, that went to the Greek Isles somewhere and got, you know, beaten to death by some Serbians in Greek. It happened over the, about a week ago. He was up there with his white girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
A recent graduate, went to Greece, went into a bar, got into some altercation with some drunk white, because people should know, white people and alcohol is a dangerous combination. You just don't socialize with these people on a regular basis. When you go in, when you mix alcohol and drugs or whatever, it just takes them to a whole new level.
Some of our young people don't understand that. Some of our young people don't understand it.
20 seconds it took for them to, the man ran out the bar. You saw the video of him running, trying to save his life, and they grabbed him, and it took 20 seconds for them to bludgeon this man on the street, kill him from head injuries. But I'm just telling the experience, he's 22 years old. Didn't y'all raise this boy? This is Texas. Didn't y'all raise this boy to say, okay, you and white people don't mix, you know, because we keep, but this is what happened to this generation, the post-civil rights generation, where you have these children walking around here. You know, Ari's the only one who, you know, with this tunnel vision saying that we are all the same, we could all get along, and there's no difference. But I keep telling people, I said, I have brothers and sisters. We came from the same mother and same father. We don't share the same blood type. If they need a blood transfusion, I can't give it to them. They need an organ transplant, I can't give it to them. I have children that I give birth to. We don't have the same blood type. And they came from me. I was there when it happened. So why are you going to tell me that somebody who don't share my ethnicity, don't look nothing like me, that we are all the damn same? And I have people that are blood related, and we can't even share organs or share blood in a life-threatening situation. It makes no sense.
Sarah, I want to thank you for your contribution. We got some callers backed up, so I'm going to try to get to them.
Okay, y'all are welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, Sarah. We lost a caller, 315 area code. The 315 caller, if you want to call back, the line is open. 315 area code, that caller can give us a call back. Let's go to 719. 719 area code.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. How you doing, sir?
How are you?
How you doing, Brother Richard?
How you doing now?
This is Ramon calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
How are you, Ramon?
I'm good, sir. Thank you, Mr. Booker. I did want to make a comment on that Roland Martin thing. I mm-hmm. particularly didn't want to get involved with it. I think it speaks for itself if you really – that's my opinion. At the same time, my opinion about that whole scenario is that one thing – I'll use my background. My background happens to deal in entertainment, which is music mostly.
Okay.
I think a lot of times we are seeing scripted scenarios. Now, Dr. Umar wasn't part of the script. He just happened to be the target. I believe a lot of this stuff is just truly scripted out. And one thing I really am saddened about and disappointed is that they could actually turn the conversation on its head to where we're talking about white females and gay people. I am very saddened that we have black men. I'm a black male. I am very disappointed that I have to be reduced down to the comparison between a white female and a gender confused person or someone who's chose to do something that they want to. I'm going to say it's a choice. And a lot of people don't like to say homo. And one thing I don't like, I'm going to back up here. I hate the acronym LGBT. Why? As one of my daughters came home from school one year and talked to me and tried to talk to me about diversity, and she explained her definition. And I responded to her saying that that is not diverse. You do not, that right there tells me you're not being taught diversity. Her explanation of diversity was just simply accepting someone's pronouncement without seeing action. My understanding of diversity is I can accept you for what you do, who you are, and what you're about, even though I may not accept it or believe in it. That's my definition of diversity, and I'm okay with that. One thing I do not like, and I see too often, these acronyms get changed up, get put in place when the scientific name for what they're doing in their lifestyle, and I had to explain to my daughter the same thing, that is called homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what pretty little cute name you want to put on it, it's still called homosexuality. I don't even understand how people who profess to be biblical people cannot understand when they read the word Sodom and Gomorrah, the word Sodom, sodomized means to have anal sex, and sit and talk with these stories. This stuff just really hurts me and it bothers me. I don't understand how we get here. I would like to say on the record, Roland Martin in his panel, as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Umar Johnson said it best. These people are not in our day-to-day community. I'm a contractor. I'm a builder. I go out and do this every day. And I can clearly see within the state that I'm in, there's a lot of so-called interracial dating out here. But one thing that never changes is when we have to be reminded of who we are, that never fails here in Colorado. And I've seen too many men here in this town. My best friend did a 20-year sentence. And how he got there on that 20-year sentence because of his tragic arrangement. He was with a white woman. I won't talk too personal about his business, but I'll say this. He decided he didn't no longer want a lifestyle that could send him to prison. But his white girlfriend said, I will do it and make sure you're never accountable for it. They got into a domestic situation. Police came out. They even lived in the same room. I'm an eyewitness testament to this. He had the bottom half of the house. She had the top half. When they checked her room, found what they didn't come there for in the first place. They asked her, whose is this? She said it was mine, and they locked my friend up, and he got a 20-year sentence, and I'll mute my line.
Yeah, well, I guess if he could turn back the hands of time and do it over again, he might have made another decision. The decision not to mess around with white women. Look at what didn't happen. It's a countless litany of guys that have made that mistake publicly. OJ comes to mind right off the bat.
And as you say, you know, we overlook, and this brings up, but I think, and I agree with you as far as it being scripted. And it's being scripted because I think the time from what we were talking about earlier in relationship to just the blatant police deaths that are actually a part of the visual narrative and other things that are going on, they're recognizing that if not younger people, older people are clear that this integration narrative that was sent to us, or the civil rights narrative, is not going to work. But I think people like Umar or that generation is now being able to pick up more and more traction and having more and more influence on younger minds to give them a political orientation. And that's why they have to bring them on to try to, with Black people, not with white people. It used to be where they'll bring them on with a panel of white people. Now they'll bring them on with a panel of Black people and try to say this ideological perspective or this principle is not appropriate. And the principle I'm looking at is that everything you do is political, even your relationships. And in America, we Black people have a particular relationship, political relationship, as it relates to who you partner with. And so I that's why I think that, you know, this kind of thing was intentional and could fall in the realm of entertainment and therefore scripted.
Go ahead, Ron.
I'm sorry, brother. I'm sorry, Miss Ellie. You want to say something?
I wanted to go back But if you want to address what Richard said, go ahead, and then I'll just go back to something you said earlier.
Well, he helped me remind. He reminded me of, you know, something that Gusty Renegade says on the has asked. He don't even repeat it, and I think he should. He asked a question on the show about 10 years. I mean, about 5 years ago. He asked somebody, "Have you ever seen a love story between a Jew and a Nazi, or any oppressed group and their oppressor?" And that really struck me as profound, because it's not even that I ever even thought about that question. But when I wanted to try to find in Hollywood, which is a place where you can find a lot of swirling, a lot of gumbo, if that's what you're really about. But when he asked the question, I honestly said to myself, and I went online and looked, somebody tried to challenge it and came up with some half-ass, you know, movie, but it still didn't answer the question. I've never seen an oppressed and oppressor together other than in our community, and that's really strange.
Well, you know,
I'm sorry.
It goes back to what Umar told Roland Martin and his host when they tried to, when he was mentioned, all these people, Vernon Jordan and all these others. He said, "I don't care who you name, it's definitely a contradiction, and it is a psychological contradiction. For I don't care who it is, for whatever they've done in their life, to make a decision to marry white women when they're black. It doesn't make any sense. They need to sit on somebody's couch. They need to go and sit on Umar's couch and lay down and discuss some of these things. There's something wrong psychologically when a person does that. I don't care who it is. It's something wrong. When you make a conscious decision to go ahead." I'm sorry, sir.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I want to say this because I think my own I'm a believer that the best way to get to people is tell your own story about yourself. And I'm going to tell a brief my situation when it comes to this interracial thing. I particularly don't know what it is with white women when it comes to myself. But when I was born and raised in Oklahoma City, and I left there at 18 or 17 years old. But before I left there, the Oklahoma City, if anybody knows anything about Oklahoma, it's the home of really, truly, when you talk about black cities, this is a place full of black cities up and down north, east, south, and west. And I had never had any interest in white women. My mother decided to move us to the part of town where the white people were dominant. And I was in there probably 30 days, and I mean, this white girl chased me down. I mean, she went to the point where she would give me her father's car to drive. I had no interest in this woman or this female, and she chased, I mean, literally. I moved to Colorado. It happened to several other times in Oklahoma. I moved to Colorado. Same scenario. My wife she hates white women because of what she has sat back and saw how they gravitate when I come in the room with them. And she's not even on the stuff we're talking about. I'm trying to get her there. But just that natural response to understanding that my husband ain't even got to do nothing, and these women come flocking on him. That question alone needs to be asked. What? And I mean, we've answered it, we've heard it, but I want to say to this audience and anybody listening that black men do not chase white women. Since I've been in business for myself, I've had too many of them. They don't know how. I don't know what it is. I'm gonna just say what I believe it is. And I listen to the cows as well as the Time for Awakening. So that should tell people what I think like. In BTR News, these women, they come after us. And some of us, we get weak. I got weak a few times. I'm not going to front. It was about money. That was my whole gamut. But these women come after us unrelentless. And that's all I want to say, Brother Ellie. Thank you.
Hey, listen, before you go, I want to make a comment about something you said earlier when you talked about this homosexual lifestyle, and you don't understand how Christian churches don't say anything about it. I think that's what you said.
Yes, sir.
One of the reasons, and I'll throw this out to you, and you the food for thought. One of the reasons our black churches, I ain't talking about the white ones, that the black church doesn't say anything about it. Now, you'll see some storefront neighborhood churches, some of the ministers in there might talk against it. But these big churches that generate lots of money, the reason they don't say anything about it, and some of your prominent ministers like Sharpton and others, is because they are 501c3 organizations. And a 501c3 organization is sanctioned by the government. And there's certain things that you have to do in order to keep that tax-exempt status. So if the government says that this behavior should be accepted, then you as a church organization, you better find some way to try to explain your way out of it by using scripture, use your own opinion, you use anything you got to do to try to explain your way out of these behaviors, because they're definitely not biblical and they're definitely not cultural. They have nothing to do with any African culture. Those things strictly come out of Europe. They was accepted behaviors among ancient Europeans. That's historically clear. That ain't no racist statement, bigoted statement. All you got to do is check history. Those was accepted behaviors among European society. In fact, for some of our folks that's Catholic out there, they just caught the Pope's assistant. Well, they didn't catch him. Put it this way. He wasn't there. But they came in. Richard, I know you saw that article where the Pope's assistant had some type of male orgy going on at his house.
Right.
And the people there was arrested. He wasn't. The owner of the place wasn't arrested. But all the folks there was arrested. Now, you mean to tell me he didn't have nothing to do with it? He wasn't involved in it in his leisure time? That his roommate or whoever he was living with had some old homosexual orgy going on at his house? These are accepted behaviors. It's always been an accepted behavior in the Catholic Church among ancient Romans and Greeks. It was an accepted behavior. You find some blacks to try to make this thing acceptable among, I ain't saying there was no homosexuals in Africa, but this was never an accepted behavior among any African cultures. But now this stuff is being pushed on our children. And if we don't do something about it, it's going to be an accepted behavior among our children. And it'll be hell trying to get it out of them.
You can already see
it. You can already see it. We done fell down on the job. We didn't fell down on the job, man. No, go ahead. Your last comments, well, and then I'll move on.
I was going to testify to you. Colorado Springs is a place that is first and foremost on the list of LGBT rights. And like I said, I've had this conversation with one of my very own children. It's a trend that that inner city kids is taking hold to. I was home in Oklahoma City visiting Dave going to Dave's show and the Tando show just here in March this year. Being out in Oklahoma City, my brother informed me that they have to have police or some type of authority that has to walk the hall just to keep the kids from doing homosexual activity in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bad there. And it's like the trend is we see Kim Kardashian them and, whoever. And I'm not going to blame it on them. But I'm going to just simply say that trend has taken hold as a lifestyle. There are children out here, and I can testify to my very own, who are living a double life. That we have to sit them down and say, you are being taught to do this. You are not. I can tell from your birth and your what you grew up like, something has gotten into you. So I'm only reaching out today because this conversation is really deep. I believe Roland Martin, did his guest a disservice. I believe his panel, if you look at his panel, I don't care if anybody else want to say it. I respect Dr. Wellson. I read it. Neely Fuller. Everybody. I'm on Black Talk Radio 24/7. Check my IP server and my phone number. It's on here. One thing I can honestly say, whether it's not in our codification or not, is that there were a bunch of homosexuals besides that last gentleman who spoke about his mother's interaction with the civil rights. I think Roland Martin is a homosexual. That's me saying it. This is my opinion. But I believe there was a bunch of homosexuals were sitting on that panel that was interviewing Dr. Umar Johnson.
Yeah,
and
listen,
Roland Martin has no legitimate reason to respond to nothing after buck dancing for Hillary Clinton. That is a fact. That ain't my opinion. That's his action.
Oh, you didn't like that video when he was up there dancing.
It's sickening. It's sickening. It's sickening. Brother Elliot, I'm serious. It's sickening. It's disturbing. And I don't understand how he come from where he come from. And here's something else, Brother Elliot, I want to ask you, or anybody on this audience. I had to even ask my mother this. I had to ask my mother after being told by my aunt. They picked cotton as kids. And I said, what do you mean you picked cotton? I thought slavery was over. And she said, no, we were sharecroppers.
Right.
So that's my history book. I don't need to go, and I tell my children all the time, you don't need a history book. Just talk to me, and I can tell you what happened 20 years before you was born.
Ramon.
Listening to my.
Yes, oh, go ahead. Sir, no, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, just listening to my aunt and just trying to put things in perspective. One thing I don't like is when we sit here and talk as if all this overt racism, no, all this terroristic activity is new. And when I hear on the radio all day long, 1871, 16 this, 1500 this, blah, 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 that, everybody is acting and talking as though this overt terrorism connected to racism is somehow some new thing.
Right.
Hell, I was beating up and fighting white boys in Oklahoma City. It's the Bible Belt. I had my first couple of fights in life happened because white boys was calling me niggas in Dell City, Oklahoma.
Ramon.
So when I have to see, yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no. I was, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish.
No, because I'll take the show over, sir. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get that off my chest. That particular, and here, Brother Ellie, I want to say this before I get off the phone. All this Roland Martin stuff, it just proves what Neely Fuller Jr. says. We're so focused on what Roland Martin and Dr. Umar Johnson then went through that we forgot about Peyton Manning sitting up there disrespecting them young brothers who don't even know they got more power than he do. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook was disrespected to the fullest by that racist that played football here in my state.
Oh, I didn't see that one, but I'll have to check on it.
ESPY Awards, Brother Elliot, it was on the ESPY Awards. Peyton Manning made a comment or joke that basically compared Russell Westbrook being the better candidate to be on the women's acrobatic team, because they were dominant winning women, and Kevin Durant wouldn't be. And only thing I could get out of that is because Westbrook put himself out there wearing skirts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's the more dominant woman of the two men. I hate that term, donors, sperm donor, deadbeat dad, when people don't even understand how the hell we got there. Thank you, Mr. Elliott. I appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Hey, Ramon, don't be a stranger, man. Ramon? Okay, I guess he's gone. Let's go. Let's go to 602. 602 area code.
Yes, Brother Richard and Brother Elliott. This is Brother Marcus from Memphis.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey,
all right, man. I'm doing all right. you know, the Negro's dream. They say the Negro's dream is a white woman. You know what I'm saying? That Clarence Thomas. That happened to me in high school, too. When I was in high school, I worked in this Jewish camp. You know, them Jewish, they got a camp for their kids for summertime. They send their kids to summer to camp for six weeks out to the, yeah, in Pennsylvania when I was back in the 80s. They got a, them Jews got their, man, they are organized from the cradle to the grave.
There you go.
But there was this blonde hair, blue eyed white girl out there. And she was saying, oh, you speak the Queen's English. You know, she was there. She had money too, had land and everything. And I wasn't even conscious at that time, but I told her, look, it can't work because you are white and I am black. You know, when I went back to New York, she sent me that record, Ebony and Ivory, you know, that Paul McCartney song. You know, but I think that messed up that white girl's head, though, because before the end of the summer, you know, she used to carry herself nice. But before the end of this summer, she looked tore up, you know. So I guess, you know, she probably like, wow, I've been rejected by her, you know. But, you know, I there's something about them, you know. She had this
foul like said, Brother Marcus, she said, Dad, I got rejected by a black man.
Yeah, I think that makes that white girl head up, I swear, you know what I'm saying? Because she was to carry herself real nice, you know, clean and stuff. But when I told her, I said, look, this can't work because you are white. And I am black. I think, you know, she had them blue eyes. She was looking at her eyes, blue, you know. But, you know, that integration, you know, integration is really, it's not really the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant that's pushing integration, you know. It's our liberal friends. See, they're the ones that's really pushing the integration. And they're pushing us to integrate. While they are separating at the same time, you see, and then they rob both the WASP and they rob the black folks, but they use the black folks as a buffer between themselves and, you know, because you got to listen to everything, you know. You see, I listen to David Duke channel, I listen to him, you got to hear what they're saying too. You see, I'm saying, you know, I listen to Black Talk, but I listen to what them crack is saying too. You hear what's going on in there. In their setup, you know, but the way this country looks now, they are fighting amongst themselves. The WASP and the Jew, they are fighting amongst who's going to run the show. And this is our opportunity to get ourselves organized.
Exactly.
That is the problem, you know. We are not organized. When the first thing that Nelson Mandela said when he came out of prison, he said, organization is everything. All else is hot air, you see? So we got to get ourselves organized, use this crack now that they have going on within them, you know, to get ourselves together, get ourselves prepared, you know, pick up where Mr. Garvey left off. Buy them ships, you know, ships, you know, ships, you got ships for $2 million now. Ships are cheap, you know, we got the money in our community. We just got to get ourselves organized, develop, you know, so many black people moving back to Africa. I was looking at that program the other day. Many, many black folks going back to Africa. They're going to Ghana. But the problem is over there, too, disorganization. Because if they were even organized over there, we were organized over here, we could get something going. So we have to get organized. The brother says, you know, Richard, and we were saying, you say, we and the sister Sierra, we need to develop an internal corrective force. Just like the mafia, them people got the. You can't go in the mafia community and talk about you're going to sell some drugs. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're going to stand in the corner and act a fool. You ain't going to be there anymore because they got an internal corrective force. So we got to, you know, and I think we are, you know, I think we are at the point where we are getting to that stage, you know, because let's say, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will, and the conditions are driving us to that. And I think that's why you see the repression so much. That's why you see the shooting so much, because they see us moving in that direction. You know, so you know, this is, you know, we're going to the top. You know, I am convinced we're moving to the top. We're going back to where we're supposed to be, in spite of how dismal it may look, you know, but we got to go to prepare. We got to go prepare the motherland, prepare for our people, because as you said, it's going to go down in this country, and it's going to get a point they may intern our people here. You know, we go may have to intern their behind over there. You see what I'm saying? That day we could swap. See, all right, because, you know, so we know our people have a lot of problems, you know, but I doubt we're really, really going to solve our problems here in America, you know, in the context of the environment that they have set up. We the advanced guard got to move, go prepare a place in the motherland, go link up with the mass majority of our people, and, you know, prepare for what's coming down the pike. You know, there was one last thing. There was a thing today. They said that Memphis, the prosecutor in Memphis, Amy Wyrick, they said that she was the most corrupt out of all over 300 municipalities. They said Memphis was last on the list for suppressing people's rights, right here in Memphis, down south here in the Bible Belt, Tennessee. So it tell you what's going on. Anyway, good brothers, you take care and you keep up the good work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
All right.
Listen, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we got a couple of callers on hold, and we'll get right to them. We still got some time left in the program, so if you want to get involved, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Call us, that's still on hold. We'll be right back, and we'll get to you after this break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful. Today, our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m. with your host.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we're in open forum this evening. It's Friday. And you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go right back to the caller that's been on hold. Let's go to 646. 646.
Well, what's happening, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot? How are y'all good brothers doing?
How you doing, Brother Jay?
Hey, listen, man. You know, that whole thing with Brother Umar, I don't think it was really a setup, because the people that they had on the show are usually on there on Mondays. So I don't think that was a setup, because if it was a setup, I think the lawyer would have behaved in a different fashion. I'm not surprised by the Republican cat, and I'm not surprised by the chick who's a lesbian. You know, I think the thing is that there's a narrative being placed on that show that most people ain't really catching up on, and this is our incorporation into America's so-called nightmare, which in the minds of Negroes like Roland and the Republican and the lesbian is we have to integrate into whiteness. You know what I'm saying? They're not into really anything being separate or Pan-Africanism like Brother Umar was talking about. Now, I have issues with Brother Umar. You know what I mean? I personally think he's a fraud. But I got to give him credit when credit is due. I think that when you address certain things, you have to be straightforward in regards to when you're talking about this whole interracial thing. Because, you know, this is what they're pushing. And, you know, I'm going to say this, and I want people really to think about this. If you keep on putting milk in black coffee, there ain't going to be no more black coffee. And it seems like that's the direction that Negroes like Roland and them are trying to get us to go into. Now, we could say that Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier, all Negroes, did some things for our people. But in all honesty and all truthfulness, what did they really do? Like Brother Umar said, they didn't have enough respect for our people to marry an African woman. So, no, I'm never going to respect them. You understand? And I'm glad that Umar said it, and he stood firm with it. Now, out of all of the things that he said to me, the most important thing that he said when they was addressing the civil rights movement, how he put it out there, which Negroes will never talk about, with in all truthfulness, if you think about it, has been what has led to our demise as a people, was the ability to bring forward acceptance of the freak, lesbian, and white women who are in the position at this present time in this country over black people. You understand what I'm saying? If you notice, nobody said anything about that, even though it was at the end. But that's something that has not, never, ever really been addressed. Now, if you take into context what was said in regards to what have white folks systematically done for us as an African people, and all you can come back with is Lyndon Johnson and the cracker Peckerwood Tim Mott, then you're in trouble with my book. Because in all truthfulness, neither one of them devils ain't done a damn thing for African people. Because, like Brother Umar said, they're not challenging white people and white supremacy to change its ugly, unnatural ways. But see, they never want to put forward that type of argument because everything is about, oh, let's get over, you know, our hatred for the Peckerwoods. Let's get along with the white man. We can work with the white man. But listen, like the earlier caller said, you ain't never heard of a damn Jew marrying a Nazi. I ain't never heard of it. I don't even think Jews sleep with Germans, if the truth be told. And if they do, they'll be ostracized for their community. We the only people that choose to integrate on the level that we do without oppressor because for some reason it makes us feel good. And, you know, I could honestly say this because, you know, I'm one of these people that done dealt with the Peckerwood before. Let me tell you something. It was the worst decision I ever made in my life. Thank God I was young, dumb, and stupid at the time. So I forgive myself.
You're
it was the worst mistake I ever made in my life. But the thing is that we as a people, if we keep on going in the direction that we're going in, there ain't going to be no more black coffee, brother. It's going to be nothing but a group of mulattoes in our midst. And the mulatto is never going to take the side of his African self. He will always, to the bitter end, defend his right side. They were just on Facebook today going in on the so-called great new version of Harry Belafonte, that Negro Jesse Williams. But did you see where Jesse Williams done left his black wife and then went out there and got him a Becky? You see what I'm saying? And, you know, we have to understand that these who you mate with is a political and a cultural statement. You know what I'm saying? And it's unfortunate that we at this present time are not making those type of statements, nor are we teaching our children that type of narrative, because for some reason, we think if we do, our children are going to be hurt. But I tell you like this, if one of them ever brung a pickerwood in my house, they all will be kicked out and be disowned. And that's the real. Because they know better. It's just not going to go down because it's no reason for it. And, you know, if we don't accept this and start talking in the fashion in which Brother Omar is saying these things, you're going to look around 50 years from now and there ain't going to be no more black family. It's going to be a mutation of a black family. It's going to be a black family to whereas, you know, you got you your white little Becky and all of that, man. And yo, it ain't right. It's not right. And what's gonna happen to that black child? You know what I'm saying? You're not gonna see no more beautiful dark skinned sisters. You're gonna see these light skinned sisters. And I'm light skinned. But you know, sir, I'm gonna let it be known. I don't like nothing light skinned. If you ain't burnt black, you don't do I look at you, as I put that baby on you, I think about her back home in Africa. I think about this is what my queens look like when I was home because of the melanin, the sun, and just the beauty of our people. So, you know, we really have to deal with this. But, you know, Elliot, hopefully you could get somebody on that could really break down even further than Brother Omar did in regard to this whole thing about how that civil rights bill led to these lesbian freaks and these white women being in a situation that they have more power in this country than we do. Because, you know, Roman is not even going to address that, bro. He's not even gonna talk about that. They sidestep that. And as far as that lawyer goes, you know, the guy, I think his name is Scott Bolden, if I'm not mistaken. He's been involved in a lot of the serious cases in Baltimore and Washington in regards to police brutality. He's been a lawyer on a lot of those cases, and he's made a lot of money in getting, you know, people rewards for police brutality and stuff like that. So if you notice, that's why he didn't really say nothing too tough like that lesbian chick do. And you know, I'm gonna go on record. A lesbian can't tell me nothing, like my Bernie Mac say, in regards to black-on-black love with a man and a woman, but they not into it. If you ain't into something, how you gonna talk about it? You know what I mean? I'm not in the mixed breed with white women, so how am I really gonna talk about it other than the fact that it's nasty? So I'm just gonna go on national TV and say that black-on-black love between a black man and a black woman is nasty. But I could go on there and say that it's nasty when it's Bob and Steve and Becky and Susie. you see what I'm saying? You can't do that. But I can do it because, you know, unfortunately, the society, at the expense of black folks, think about it. Now, just think about it, Elliot. If Omar is right in regards to the civil rights bill, and the funny thing is, they use the civil rights bill. How the hell could the civil rights bill really be for black people if every so couple of years you got to renew that shit? Think about that. But nobody talks about that. Do you ever see anybody articulate that? Have you ever heard somebody really articulate the amendment in what Brother Umar said was placed in it to make it go through that was used once they found out that it was in there to put forward a movement over the last 50 years to elevate those two groups over black folks? Think about it. Do you think where I'm coming from? Those two groups have surpassed black people in America. We are on the bottom of both of those groups. Both of those groups got a foot now behind. We have no power over them.
But it goes back to what Sarah raised, and you know, brought up when we had the discussion, because we would have been surpassed in political power in relationship to those groups, and we would have had influence in relationship to the policies if the infrastructure that Umar represents, I forget that it's him, but what he represented was the principle of Pan-African or African nationalist community that was intentionally destabilized. I think that's the point. Ain't nobody coming after white women as an organized force. Ain't nobody coming out. And the gay and lesbian community, or whatever they want to call themselves, you know, which
just got the right to be able to say, come out. But they have always, amongst the white community, had economic power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they're the ones that set the fashions. They're the ones that set the design.
They saved in their lane, though. If you notice, they stayed in their lane and they maneuvered themselves into a position, maybe through economics and some other things, to get to the point now to where as they have the say-so on the level that they do in this country. And here we do. We have been here over 500-600 years, and we don't even have that type of power or say-so, and we talking about integrating with our oppressor. So what the hell is that leaving us? Where is that leaving
But I think that we still have to, and I hear what you're saying, Jay and Elliot, you know, rescue me if I'm wrong, but that, and if we codified it in the that civil rights community, particularly, and it was a particular type of community, because I think that community, we see that they got benefits from the political maneuvering of that civil rights bill. Most of the black people of the populace who are in urban and rural areas did not benefit economically from the civil rights bill. It's a certain slice. And those are the ones that you see that are now, whether you say about PhDs or on in the commercial, it's that slice that's benefit. But the civil rights bill as an economic engine did not satisfy most black people. You look at the numbers, we're still our health condition, our employment condition, our business development, it's all below, is worse than it was before the civil rights bill was passed.
And why is that? Because other people are controlling the narrative on what is going forward. If I control the narrative, I dictate where things go. And that is the issue that we as a people are caught up in and can't seem to come out of it, because we got Negroes like Roland Martin who want to portray a narrative of inclusion with the oppressor, and that makes it seem as though we have achieved something. But in reality, what have we achieved? And I'll leave you with this. He always talks about News One being black owned. Now, I don't know how much News One is black owned. I don't know if they have controlling interest of the company. They may have the controlling interest of the stock, and I hope that they do. Then it would really be a black owned company. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if they wasn't like BET was before Bob Johnson sold them off, to whereas he had a 49% controlling interest and the cracker had 51%, and yeah, he sold it, and yeah, he became a rich man, but it was never solely black owned. And this is the reality and the narrative that Negroes like Roland goes about the business at hand, because he's never going to have a Pan-Africanist on the program. And I'll leave you also with this. Your boy Umar just set himself up to not be back on this show, because I don't really think he wants to deal with that scrutiny again by using the magic word, the next time you come on, the next time I come on, you're going to have to pay me because I increased your rating so much. The nerve of that Negro. That's why I say that Negro's a fraud, because he doesn't let it be known. You didn't pay me this time, but the next time you're going to have to give me some money. So that means you pimping now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I don't blame him. I wouldn't go in there unless they paid me.
I understand that. But see, the thing is that you went on there the first time without them paying you. You did a decent job. You didn't finish the job because you got slightly emotional because they were challenging you. You had lightweights coming at you. You know what I'm saying? And I thought he was pretty nice. I thought he was pretty nice to the lesbian, because I'd have shut the lesbian down quick, because I'd have just went for the kill on her
It was Abinellian voices up quickly. And as far as the Republican go, you know, there's certain words you could say to them to show their lack of relevance when he started talking that nonsense about
I'm American.
And we as Americans, we work together to make things better. I'm America never work together with your black ass to make anything right in this country. They don't even care about you, Toby. You know what I mean? I think we're going to have to come up with a new word for the Negro since you can't use the N-word and cool. Maybe we should start using the word Toby. How does that sound? Because I think we can't use Sambo. But can we say Toby? You know, so you think maybe Toby may have an effect, the chilling effect of smacking him upside the head slightly and making them think you're acting like Toby. But yeah,
before I let you go, I wouldn't call him Toby because Toby wanted to run off the plantation, and he was a thorn in the side to the master. So no, don't call him Toby.
But then again, you can't call him Coochie. You can't call him Coochie. And I don't know if we want to call him Fiddler. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe Fiddler would be for the shocking effect, but yeah, I mean Roman do it. You gotta give Roman a certain degree of credit because he do his thing, but no, man, he's not gonna have no Pan-Africanism on it. They got a young brother I hope one day you can get on, man, by the name of Adam Jackson, man. Our brother Adam Jackson out of Baltimore. Real good young brother, strong young brother. You got to get him on your show, Elliot. He was on Roman's show one day, right?
Send me some information. Go ahead.
And he was on Roman's show one day, right? And he started talking about the black community and how we need to develop our own and do for self. And do certain things as an African people and separate ourselves on a certain level, you know, as a people. And they had, you know, this chick on there, Angela Rock, who I got issues with. And you know, so after he spanked her up pretty nice and put it out there, you know, that we have to stop trying to really integrate into this madness. You know, the brother ain't never been back on the show, man. And he's a strong young brother too, man. I mean, he's the type of brother, man. If you get him on the show, you love him, Elliot.
What is he, a columnist or what is he, activist?
No, he's a community activist out there in Baltimore. His name is Adam Jackson, man. Beautiful, smart, intelligent brother, man. He got a little bit of Stokely in him, man. He got a little bit of H-Rock Brown in him, man. He's just a real, real rounded brother that, as a young age that know he's African, man, and he know what the community needs, and it ain't integrating into this madness, and that's why I enjoy listening to him, man. And you know the beautiful thing is, he put them Negroes on front, B. He always blasting them on Twitter talking about how black leadership are nothing but a bunch of sellouts. How they ain't about nothing, how they ain't really trying to build a community. They the reason why Freddie Gray, you know what I mean? He's the type of brother you need on the show, man. So listen, man, all I'm gonna say is this. It's good to see brothers like Umar that come on the show. He held up pretty well. He defended himself. He got a little too emotional, but he did his thing. And you know, I just wish he would have put that lesbian in that place a little bit more. Because, see, you can't never have no lesbian attack a straight black male. Because once you do that, it causes problems for us. Because they go on the war with, man. You know, it's just like with that Black Lives Movement is. Even though they're becoming more and more outside of the norm with their thing, but think about how over a period of time they were able to garnish enough leeway within the community that people started looking at them as something viable to our struggle and they ain't nothing but a bunch of degenerate freaks. You know what I mean? And degenerate freaks can't leave Pan-African and nationalist and African people to liberation. Hold tight, brothers.
Thanks for your call.
All right.
Let's go to, last but not least, let's go to the Germantown section.
Hey, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing,
Good now.
Hey, Brother, I hope, let me say this first. I hope Sister Sarah is still listening because I just want to say to Sister Sarah, it's good to hear you on tonight, my sister. I haven't heard you in a while. I hope you call more often if your schedule permits. I will be in Dallas, Texas, Allah willing, the weekend of the 25th to the 29th for my family reunion. That's the Worsley family reunion. My cousin Vanessa is hosting it on my mother's side of the family. And I'll be staying at the Wyndham Garden Hotel, Wyndham Garden North Hotel in North Dallas on Lyndon B. Johnson Highway. So I hope if Sister Sarah's still listening, you can stop by and ask for Joe Dennis, and they'll get me. Because I'd like to, like, since I'm going to be in Dallas for like 4 days, I'd like to get a chance to meet Sister Sarah. Because I met one of the callers from Atlanta back years ago that was from the old terrestrial radio station when I was down in Atlanta for mine back in 99. So I hope if Sister Sarah's still listening, she could come to the the hotel, the Wyndham Gardens Hotel on Lyndon B. Johnson Highway the weekend of any days from the 25th to the 30th, and let's ask for Joe Dennis because I'd like to meet Sister Sarah. Moving along, Elliot and Richard, I'd just like to say this. I don't know where to begin with Brother Umar. Brother was dynamic, man. It was just, Umar was bringing it. The brother was bringing the heat and stuff on the show, man, and stuff. I mean, he was just bringing it. And, you know, Brother Romaine from Colorado, and I hope he calls more often, too. This is the first time I heard him. I hope he spreads the word about Time from the Waking out there in the Colorado area so people out there start calling, the black community in Colorado start calling in. But on Peyton Manning real quick, that devil, I don't know what he said about Westbrook or about the clothes or whatever, but like Brother Romaine said, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard, Westbrook, we discussed this before, Brother Elliott, about Westbrook. He's a great ball player. And, you know, it's funny, his wife had just had their first child about a couple weeks ago. But he do wear these loud clothes that, to me, is improper for a man to wear. Because men just don't wear certain colors and stuff. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And he wears these loud colors. So he would give a devil like Peyton Manning the opportunity to say something crazy like that. But I still would have put that devil in his place for saying something like that. And like saying, you know, that he would be more woman-like over Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant should have put that devil in his place, you know. But we have a habit of letting these devils say that stuff. And see, again, I'm not surprised that Peyton Manning would say that because, like I said, if you remember Brother Elliot in the high white media swept under the rug, right after he retired last year, it came out that when he was at the University of Tennessee, they had a black female trainer. Remember the story? And she was her job was to pretty much tend these athletes after they have a tough practice or game, and she would, you know, tend to their cramps, their bruises,
yeah,
whatever like that.
Yeah, he sexually harassed her.
Was that it?
He sexually harassed her.
Right, exactly.
And they swept it under the rug.
He pulled his genitalia out and told the sister to grab it. And he even tried to put it in her face. And the sister sued the university, and every she complained, and she wound up suing the university. They paid her off twice. They gave first when she quit or got fired. I forgot exactly how it happened. They gave her a big financial settlement, and then when she went out and she told a story to one of the newspaper outlets or whatever, they paid her some money again for her to be not to be so explicit in what she had said, what Peyton Manning did to her. So this cracker, I'm not surprised that he would say something like that because he ain't nobody old racist. See, you know, that's, I'm going to tell you something, bro. These brothers that play sports, whether it be basketball, football, whatever, these brothers, when they look at these white boys like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, all these little white devil quarterbacks, they are some of the most round your worst to play here in Philadelphia. All of them are right-wing Republicans. But these Negroes, these misguided Negroes that play sports, they think these white boys are their friend. They're a bunch of racist devils. They're a bunch of bigots and stuff like that. And do you get a stupid Negro like Ray Lewis? And I'm so glad, Brother Elliot. That's why I say y'all can't get that Brother Jones from the black law enforcement. He's a black police officer. He chopped Ray Lewis' head up about a few weeks ago when Ray Lewis came out there and made the ignorant comment that Colin Kaepernick should decide whether he's going to be an athlete or an activist. He said only a slave would say something like that. Only a Negro with a slave mentality would say something like that. Now, here's a brother that's a black police officer saying this about Ray Lewis. You know what I mean? See, as I say, some of these brothers on law enforcement, they're conscious. And that's what we and you said it yourself the other week, Ellen. These brothers and sisters on these police departments got to stand up because the life they save one day may be their own. Because these white cops have shown time, and I mentioned this in your show last week, they show time and time again they don't give a damn about them either, whether they're in uniform or out, because they have shot black cops in uniform, they have shot black cops out of uniform. You know what I mean? So these brothers don't stand up. That, like I said, the life they save may very well be their own and stuff. You know, and I know y'all pressed for time. I close with these last couple of things. You know that devil cop, I don't know if you and Richard heard the story, that devil cop down in Texas, that old cracker that had arrested Sandra Bland, you know, he threw her on the ground and everything like that, and see, he'd light up and everything. Well, the devil, the judge down there just dropped the charge because, you know, he got fired from the police, from the state troopers down there. Well, they just dropped the perjury charge. You know, he perjured himself because he lied and said that the reason why he was rough on Sister Sandra because he said that she physically assaulted him, which was a lie. All the footage showed that was a lie. Well, anyway, the judge down there, because I read in the final call, the judge down there dropped the charge in exchange for this devil the promise. And see how they set things up for these whiteys, for him to promise that he'll never become a member of any law enforcement ever again. Now, Elliot, like you always say, Elliot, we got to get some kind of thing in place that when they fire these devil cops, whether they state troopers, policemen, sheriffs, whatever, they never be working as law enforcement again. Because like you said, Elliot, these racist FOPs, when everything quiet down, they'll put that devil on some job in some little small town in Texas somewhere, obscure town, and that devil still be on a police on somebody's police department
the police
with the chance to shoot or hurt a black person. You know, same thing with Dan Wilson. They killed Michael Brown. They said that devil got fired. For we don't know what the deal is. For all we know, L.A. and Rich, that devil could be on some police department somewhere in this country. Mm-hmm. You know. Because that's what they do to these devils and stuff, you know. But it's just amazing how they always look out for these devils. And when y'all start off the show, y'all mentioned about that cracker that killed the four white boys out there in up in Bucks County. Maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, did the white media, now this devil killed four white boys, right? Now, did the media, have you heard the word savage or thug?
No.
No. Amazing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed something. But I could swore in a black community, a young black man, if he shoots and kills somebody, which is definitely wrong, first thing that he sees, he's a thug, he's an urban terrorist, he's this and that. But this cracker kills four white boys, and so he's white too. He kills four white boys, but I never heard the term savage or thug mentioned. And notice how quick, Brother Elliot, that the prosecutors out there, the grand jury and the prosecutor's office out there, drop the death penalty because he admitted to
killing these four boys. This is what we was talking about about white privilege. Number one, I've never seen them impanel a grand jury that quickly.
I know.
They just recovered them bodies a day or two ago. They impaneled a grand jury, and plus, how are you going to drop the death penalty when the guy ain't even been charged with murder?
They
haven't officially charged him with murder as of yet. Now, they might do it tonight. But when they dropped that, was talking about the death penalty and all they had him on was car theft. He had one of the guy's cars that had been
murdered.
That's
right. That's right. But see, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, that disproves what our dear ancestors said years back 50, because you play some of Malcolm's speeches where El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz says, the white man makes the laws and he makes them up as he goes along. He make right wrong. Because you know damn well, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they don't do that for black people. No matter under no circumstances do they impanel a grand jury. Can you imagine, Elliot, let's do the scenario thing, you and Richard. Y'all brothers know what time it is. Make that devil, Cosmo Donato, whatever that cracker's name was, make that a young black boy, young black, same age, 20-year-old black boy from North Philly or Germantown, kills four white boys the same way. What you think his fate would be right now? Under the same circumstances, nothing different.
Well, he would be charged right now with four counts of murder. And probably his parents also as accomplice.
Exactly. That's correct. Exactly. My point is, especially because it was the boy.
They'd have to go to trial and prove that they wasn't.
Exactly. That's correct. So just go to show our people what white, like you said, white privilege and stuff. See, like you said, Elliot and Richard, if our people don't see, if this don't wake our people up, but see, because some of our people are asleep, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, the Negro dumb, deaf, and blind, that we don't need, some of us just go right over the top of our heads. We don't see clearly white privilege at play here. You know what I mean? I mean, it's clearly, and Elliot, I'm glad you told me the other day, and I don't know if you shared this with Brother Richard, because I missed like the first 15 minutes, that white actor that was, they used the N-word to those police officers. Remember you shared that with me the other day, Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that white, I forgot the white actor's name.
Shia LaBeouf.
What's his name?
LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf.
Right, that devil. But they was talking about him to terrestrial radio this morning, and even they had to admit that this is a ploy of these white people. So this white boy makes these racial slurs to the black cop. He insults the white cop, and then he comes.
He didn't say anything insulting to the white cop.
Was that Elliot?
He didn't say anything insulting to the white cop. In fact, the white cop didn't say nothing to him when he was insulting that black cop. It was the black cop just saying, why are you saying that to me? Why are you talking to me like that? That's all he was saying.
Wow. Well anyway, when they were saying on terrestrial radio, this white boy is typical like these devils when they make these slurs. So he made this bogus apology on Twitter about he ain't racist and all that. You know how them devils come with that stuff. You know, he ain't racist and this and that. And, you know, and that's a bit, white people have always used.
Well, listen, I seen the video. It didn't look like he was drunk. He stood up.
No, I know he wasn't drunk. Let's say for the sake of argument that he was drunk, Elliot. As you and Richard Brothers have been around for a while, I know the deal. What they said about alcohol has a way of the truth coming out of you for what you really felt. You know how the old saying goes, Elliot. I forgot how it's worded, but you know the old saying, when a white person drunk make racial slurs, that, you know, alcohol has a way of bringing out the truth in you and stuff. Because I never forget, Brother Elliot Richard, and I closed these last couple comments, when I used to work at Sears up on the boulevard years and years ago, one of the white managers and stuff, they called him Mr. C. You know how black people, and I'm sure you and Richard, when y'all was in the workforce and stuff, like how you know, you work on jobs with black people and whites and stuff like that. You know, more black people more than Latinos, more than Asians, because you know, like you and brother Jay was saying, we don't, you know, and brother Romaine, we the only people that love to sit up there and justify, you know, marrying the oppressed or whatever. You actually, you don't see a Jew or a Nazi. Well, you know, black people have a terrible habit on jobs. If a white man or white woman is nice to them or speak nice, first thing they say, oh, he's cool. Oh, man, oh, Elliot, man, you don't know what you're talking about, man. Tom, cool, man. Or Mary, cool. I mean, and again, that's not to say, I'm not saying you don't be civil towards somebody, because like I said, I know the white man is the devil, and I ain't got no problem saying it to the world. But when I'm around white people or anybody else, I treat people like they, I want to be treated. I don't go around calling white people out unless they give me reason to. You know what I mean, Elliot? If a white man or white woman is cordial to me, I'm cordial to them as well. But that don't mean I'm going to be up there saying, well, Elliot, you know what, man? So, he's cool, man. As I work with him on the job, I know he's cool. I don't know what that man does when he leaves his job. I don't know what his mentality is. But we so quick on these jobs to say a white man or white woman is cool because they nice or they talk sports with you, whatever. That don't mean a damn thing to me and stuff. And what my thing about Mr. CSC is these same Negroes got the shock in their life, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We had the Christmas party that year. I'll never forget it. It was the Christmas of '88. And he got the, you know, they say, white, what Sister Sarah, and I hope she's still living, my sister from Dallas. What does Sister Sarah say? White people and alcohol is dangerous, right? Ain't this what Sarah said? And she said, I bet one boy went over to Greece and got killed being around them drunken white folks. Well, Mr. C, when he got enough beers and wine in him, his true colors came out. He started saying stuff like, yeah, because, you know, I get so tired of people talking about racism and stuff. My ancestors came from Ireland. They didn't own no slaves. You know how they start talking that crazy stuff? They didn't own no slaves. I'm not responsible. I never owned no slaves. I get tired of these blacks. And this is how he said it, real nasty. The blacks want this. The blacks want that. Oh, this devil was saying it straight up at the Christmas party. And, man, when everything hit the fan, Ellen, when we got back to work that next week, that devil was trying to clean it up. He came with the same old stuff. Oh, I'm not racist. I had a bad night. I went to school with black people in college and all that stuff. And the Negro, what got me, Brother Ellen Richard, the Negroes that was always bragging about how cool this devil was, they were the ones in shock. Oh, I couldn't believe he said those things. I said, I'm not surprised he said them. He a devil. I said, he a white man. I'm not surprised he said these things. I said, I kept trying to tell y'all, Negroes, y'all kept talking about something, that devil was so nice. I said, he showed y'all just how nice he was, didn't he? But see, they just show you again how people are. We so quick to want to put these people on a plateau. At the end of the day, they white boys. That's why I was telling you the other day, Elliot. That's why Bob Brady can get up there and tell you he's friends with Joe Biden, the former vice president. He's a Democrat, but at the same time, he's friends with that cracker, the Republican, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, they're still white men. No matter how you cut it, it's like they're still white men. You know what I mean? That's real, you know? That's real.
You know? Yo, I want to thank you for your contribution, man.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Richard.
All right, now.
Have a good one. Richard, we come to the end of another program. It was a lot of discussion tonight, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And a lot of good points. And I'm glad you know, Sister Sarah and Brother from Colorado was able to also contribute and help us continue to develop and what we need to look at, utilizing everything that comes our way to show what we have to do.
Yeah, I enjoyed hearing from Sarah. And Brother Ramon was a kind of fresh call. I hope he calls again. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Lazy afternoon.